Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Governor Cuomo gave his annual budget address this week, which sounds really boring when I put it that way. Annual budget address, snooze. But in budgets come policies, priorities, ideologies, and definitely winners and losers. So, for example,
Washington hit a button and launched an economic missile, and it says New York on it. And it's headed our way. You know what my recommendation is? Get out of the way before it lands.
That was about the Republican federal government tax bill that the president just signed. So one of the things Cuomo proposed is a different way to pay state income taxes so they might still be federally tax deductible fully.
This shift, while dramatic, would in many ways thwart what the federal government was trying to do on loss of deductibility.
The governor called his idea dramatic. There, you heard that. Our Albany reporter Fred Mogul calls it an elaborate contraption. He'll explain in a minute. Now, one of the political weirdnesses about budget bills is that often they include things that are not, well, budgets. The federal government shutdown that's possible this weekend could come because Democrats in Congress are tying immigration policy to a spending bill. The Republicans did shut down the government in 2013 because they insisted on trying to repeal Obamacare in a similar non-budget bill. And Cuomo's no exception when it comes to linking to other things he considers important when he's got the legislature's attention because it's budget season, for example.
We need to set a uniform code of sexual harassment policies and procedures that apply to every branch of the state and local government. Marijuana, things are happening. New Jersey may legalize marijuana. Massachusetts already has. On the other hand, Attorney General Sessions says he's going to end marijuana in every state. So you have a whole confluence of different information. I think we should fund DOH to do a study, let them work with the state police, other agencies, look at the health impact, the economic impact, the state of the law. If it was legalized in Jersey and it was legal in Massachusetts and the federal government allowed it to go ahead, what would that do to New York, which is right in the middle? But this is an important topic. It's a hotly debated topic, pardon the pun, and it'd be nice to have some facts in the middle of the debate, once in a while.
Did he say hotly debated? Was a marijuana pun? I didn't get it. So maybe our next guests can explain. WNYC Albany correspondent Fred Mogul and Karen DeWitt, Capitol Bureau Chief for New York State Public Radio. Good morning, Karen. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Brian. Governor Cuomo is not the hippest guy, so maybe that's why. Maybe, you know, maybe it's a compliment that you don't understand what he was saying.
I think it was a half-baked pun.
Half-baked? Ah.
That's okay. A vaping joke, right?
Okay. All right. I'm not in that world. Let's just make that clear, okay?
Fred, did you get the policy? Because Cuomo, who's been a skeptic about marijuana legalization, sounded like he's suddenly getting interested.
Well, he's been more than a skeptic. When he passed the legalization of medical marijuana, he really hit the medical hard. He came down hard against recreational. He felt very strongly in the fiber of his being that marijuana is a gateway drug and that New York was going to have this finely tailored, totally constrained medical marijuana that would not take us down the road to California or Colorado. But, you know, so you could say he's getting religion. You could say he's being flexible. Who knows what a panel is. He talked about funding a DOH panel. when we asked how to what tune would this panel be funded, there's no money set aside for it yet.
When he says we should look at Massachusetts legalization, which is coming, Karen, and New Jersey's, which might, if Governor Phil Murphy gets his way, is it that he doesn't want New York State to lose out on the possible tax revenue and criminal justice expense savings from legal weed?
Well, I think that's part of it. I talked to his budget director, Robert Mujica, yesterday, and he made the point that if it's legal in New Jersey and Massachusetts, New Yorkers who want to imbibe in that would go across the border to buy it. And so why not just have it here where New York could get the tax revenue and regulate it? But he also said that they do have concerns about the things that U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions has said about wanting to have a crackdown on states that, you know, have legalized marijuana. So that's also a concern. The Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie also brought up that there would probably be fewer arrests in poorer neighborhoods because more people in low-income neighborhoods get arrested for possession of marijuana than in richer areas. So that could be an improvement. But yeah, the governor has evolved on this issue from a few years ago where he definitely was very much against it.
And there's somewhat downplaying, at least at this moment, the potential for tax revenue. But Colorado is getting about $250 million a year in sales tax revenue, is my understanding, from recreational marijuana. We're four times the size, the population size of Colorado. So that would be, you know, a potentially massive little, you know, piece of revenue.
Yeah, it could go a long way to solving some of their budget problems.
One listener suggests that I heard the pun wrong. I got it as hotly debated and didn't get the joke, but that he really said highly debated. So the joke is on the word high.
That would be a pun, but I think if that was in his script, I'm pretty sure he did say hotly.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he might have blown.
If he was talking about a sauna tax or something, the hot part would have worked much better.
Wah, 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 wah. Now, Cuomo also proposed a tax hike on health insurance companies and on opioids, and that's not a morality tax, I don't think, because opioids are dangerous, so let's tax them so people use them less, like they do with cigarettes, but to help shore up Medicaid, which could face a Paul Ryan-induced shortfall and possibly other problems in New York State. Fred, am I getting this right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two cents per milligram of opioid dose of OxyContin or Percocet or so forth, and you know when those are taxed more, it tends to go downstream. The insurers, the pharmaceutical benefits managers would pay for it. The insurers will pay for it. The consumers on some level would pay for it. I don't have handy how much it would harvest, but I can't imagine it's a ton. And there, you know, the opioid sales and prescriptions are declining. The bigger piece of the healthcare puzzle is the increased tax, corporate tax on health insurers, that they're anticipating a massive corporate tax windfall, like other corporations are across various sectors of the economy, and the Cuomo's proposing clawing back some of that big federal tax savings, about 14% of that tax savings. That I think would yield somewhere on the order of, correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, is it $40 or $400 million?
I think that's about that. He also wants to do that for businesses who are going to also get what he called a windfall from the federal government in deferring business tax credits over $2 million, saying, well, they didn't expect to get such a great tax break, so they should give New York State more money.
And Karen, what is this Medicaid shortfall that the governor is warning of? Is there something new here?
Well, you know, not really new. We've been reporting on it all fall. But there is a potential big hole in this budget because the budget assumes that Child Health Plus will be restored by Congress and also what's known as the DSH money, disproportionate share hospital fund that gives money to hospitals, will also be restored. So far, Congress keeps doing these, you know, temporary three-week, you know, budget renewals. We might have a government shutdown this weekend. Who knows? So That's a big if. And if that money doesn't come through, they're going to have to reopen and revisit the budget later this year. They do have a mechanism in place to do that. The governor puts out a plan. The legislature considers it. So there is, you know, potentially a very big hole in this budget that for now they're not addressing. I really don't know how they can address it because this stuff hasn't happened. But it just shows it's just a very, very uncertain time to have to craft a state budget right now.
Listeners, any questions or thoughts about the preliminary budget proposals? And these aren't even down in writing yet. These are words that the governor of New York spoke in a budget speech this week, a budget address. We'll get to some more of the things that he's going to flesh out in more detail, like congestion pricing for driving into Midtown Manhattan. But if you want to call in with a comment or a question on any of this, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer for WNYC, Albany correspondent Fred Mogul, and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, 212-433-9692. Fred, by the way, if you want to go to our website when you have a minute, posted a good article called Five Takeaways from Cuomo's Budget Proposal. And takeaway number one is Cuomo wants to build an elaborate contraption to outmaneuver what he says is a massive federal tax hike. Remind us why the massive federal tax hike is particularly on New York, Fred?
Right. Well, he talked about that missile with the word Trump on the side coming towards New York, and he said we have to step out of the way. It's going to be a little more complicated than stepping out of the way. It's going to be kind of constructing an anti-ballistic system that may or may not shoot down the missile to ride the metaphor as far as it'll go. But our taxes are in for some people in some parts of New York State. Are especially high. We're considered a quote-unquote high tax state. We pay a relatively high proportion of state income taxes and county and local property taxes, and we've always been able to write them off from our federal tax deductions. A lot of people don't. They've always taken the standard deduction, but if you make enough, it's worth your time. You itemize. Now it's going to be less worthwhile itemizing because for two reasons. The standard deductions are jumping up to $12,000 and $24,000 for individuals and couples, married couples. And now the feds don't want to let us write off these state taxes anymore. They've capped those deductions at $10,000. So now if you have a $30,000 property tax bill, you can't write it off. You can write off up to 10,000 of it, but you're kind of out of luck. And
right.
so that is effectively a tax hike for
right.
many people.
Right. So you can only take a federal tax deduction on up to $10,000 of state and local taxes. It used to be on all your state and local taxes if you itemize your deductions. So what's this elaborate contraption to get around it?
So now he's saying, well, you know what we'll do is since you can't write these off as income or property taxes, let's find other ways for you to write them off. Payroll taxes are still deductible. You and I don't pay them. Our employers pay them. And so what if we let our state and local liability formerly basically have our shift that to our employers? And they'll pay it. They'll reduce our salary. In theory, our take-home pay would not be affected. But you would actually have to see a sort of nominal pay cut. You'd be making $80,000 one day, and then you'd be making $60,000 the next day. You know, again, the take-home in theory wouldn't vary. But I think it's a psychological hurdle for many people, and it's a very complicated apparatus to do that.
I think it wouldn't be that much of a hit because people who make $80,000 are not paying $20,000 in New York State income tax, not anything near that. But Karen, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, the concern is people who live in Westchester, Long Island, New York City suburbs have very high property taxes and also have relatively high incomes because the cost of living is higher. So they're going to be hit the worst. I have to say, Fred did a very good job explaining that. I'm glad I didn't have to. I tried to read the report from Governor Cuomo's tax department yesterday. You need to be a tax attorney or a CPA to decipher it. But I was reading through how the payroll tax, various scenarios they put out, could work. And boy, it's really complicated. You change one thing in the tax code, and there's all sorts of complications. For instance, union contracts. An employer might not be able to give a unionized worker a pay cut. What if you have minimum wage workers? You can't pay them below the minimum wage to, you know, deduct it out of their wages to pay the payroll tax. So it gets really complicated. Another option they're talking about, though, we should mention, is creating these charitable entities, like a state charity for health care, education, taking care of the homeless, and people could pay into that in lieu of taxes. That seems simpler to understand, but I don't know if legally they can do it. And they're also talking about a new kind of a business tax for certain businesses that businesses would pay, and I guess workers would have to get that taken out of the equivalent of what they would have paid in state taxes out of their paychecks. But, you know, it just, it brings home how complicated it is to really try to respond to this. But, you know, Cuomo really seems determined that he has to try and he has to put something out to at least show that he's trying.
The charitable foundation model for people's property taxes is really interesting. And I've seen a legal critique of it that suggested it might not hold up in court because you're not allowed to donate to charity and take a charitable deduction for something that's really for your own benefit. And so if your property taxes are seen, let's say, or maybe education taxes to your local school district is seen as, you know, for your benefit, because what you're really doing is just creating a mechanism to get around the new limit on federal tax deductibility, then that isn't really like you're giving to a charity.
Yeah, great. Well, how is that charity? Yeah,
I mean, you give to, you deduct what you donate to your church, for instance, that, and that certainly benefits you and your community in a very, very immediate sense. On the other hand, if your church has a big gala for the year to raise money, and it's a $200 ticket, they will send back that $100 of this is deductible and $100 isn't, or some ratio like that. If it's benefiting you with that chicken dinner, it doesn't. But you can still.
So why did he include all this in his budget address, this elaborate contraption? Is it that as part of the New York State budget, he's hoping, and the budget deadline is April 1st, so we're in the season now for the next couple of months, that the state legislature will pass bills that create these mechanisms and project New York State revenue in the context of the budget, Karen?
Yeah, his budget director says they hope to get bills in 30 days, when I guess the 30-day amendments will you have to do for the budget under the law, and that they're serious about passing this because it would need to take effect soon in order for taxpayers to benefit next year. So, you know, it seems pretty challenging, but that's what they're saying now that they're going to do. I would also add, you know, there's also the possibility that Congress could just come back and change the law and say, oh, now payroll taxes are no longer deductible, because this whole federal tax overhaul is sort of built on getting some of this money out of New York and California and other high-tax states. So it would change their balance. So there's no guarantee that Congress wouldn't just come back and change the law.
We haven't brought up the congestion pricing plan to help fund the MTA yet, and so I'm going to let a caller get us into that, and it's Ellen in Manhattan. Ellen, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm elderly, and I need taxis to get to my doctors. And what he's talking about, congestion pricing for vehicles for pay, would affect me. I couldn't possibly afford that kind of thing.
Fred, you want to start in on the congestion pricing mechanism that is going to come from the governor? It's not fully out, but I gather we have some basic guidelines for it, and then address Ellen's concern about getting to the hospital?
Sure. I mean, I'll try. I think we'll have a much, you know, better handle and ability to address her concerns in another couple days when a a more detailed plan comes out. But we've got a few more details this week than we had previously. They had discussed putting tolls on the East River bridges. Obviously, the Hudson is tolled at the Tappan Zee and George Washington Bridge and the tunnels. They would have added it to the East River bridges. Now that's off the table, actually, which I think is a hot button issue certainly for many people in Queens and Nassau County. So politically, they've removed that. The other part of it that they had previously mentioned and now they're really focusing on is this tolling, internal tolls within the streets of Manhattan in a to be determined zone. So we don't know what that zone is. We don't know, and we certainly don't know how much extra money it will be per ride. I don't think they attached numbers to that yet. Everything is sort of on hold for at least another day or two.
And
well,
this...
I live upstate, so I drive a lot more than people in Manhattan, long distances. And I go on the Massachusetts Turnpike a lot, and they have these movable poles now with these electronic sensors. And if you don't have Easy Pass, they send you a bill. And they're pretty light and maneuverable, and you can pretty much put them anywhere. You can turn them on and off at different parts of the day. If there's a certain part of the day where they don't want to have congestion pricing, maybe, as the governor said, hospital workers that need to get to work early. So it's very flexible. It's a lot easier than it used to be to do this. It's not limited to just a bridge or an existing throughway exit anymore. So there's ways that they could work this out, hopefully, maybe taking into consideration some of the callers' concerns. Who knows? I mean, that study is going to come out later this week, but it's certainly a lot easier to do than it ever was before.
And there is also the issue that we'll note but not dwell on, that the entire state legislature needs to approve New York City setting up and it's the governor's proposal, but New York City basically setting up a system of tolling for driving into one part of one borough. And yet people in Rochester and Buffalo and the Adirondacks and the Mid-Hudson Valley are going to get a say.
That is the way of a lot of state legislature. I mean, downstate legislators in theory get a say on the Buffalo Billions, massive economic development funding that goes into upstate New York. So, that is part of life. But we downstate think a lot about the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, but they think more about the Thruway Authority and other things upstate.
And hey, at least the New York City mayor isn't pushing it, right? Mayor Bill de Blasio hasn't had much luck in Albany. And congestion pricing was first pushed by New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg. And I covered him a lot when he came to Albany wanting things. And he was always in a terribly grumpy mood because the legislature never wanted to do any of the things that he wanted to do.
Here's Eric in Queens raising another item that I think we haven't gotten to yet from Cuomo's budget. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So, the affordable housing industry relies on tax credits in order to be able to fund the gap that it has created by creating affordable housing because of the fact that it's not ordinarily financeable. And so that basically relies on corporations who are willing to purchase these tax credits in order to provide this equity money. The federal government's reduction in the tax rate for corporations seriously reduced the value of these tax credits. Now, the corporations don't need them as much, so they're paying less for them. For the governor's proposal to additionally pull back or reduce the corporation's use of state tax credits, because there is a state tax credit program that also assists, will be like a double whammy. It's going to further reduce the availability of affordable housing. And this is a governor who really pushes and has a very large platform for affordable housing, and I hope he's thinking about that.
Fred Mogul?
Eric, I have a question for you because it sounds like you're very knowledgeable on this. I know a little bit, but as with many things, sort of just enough to be dangerous. The tax credit deferral that you're referring to is only – only for companies receiving or scheduled to receive $2 million or more in tax credits. Is that is it? Is it? And I asked the budget director about this. You know, how many firms this would affect, or what proportion of the tax credit pie it would affect. And they pledged to get back to me, but they have not yet. But to your knowledge, or to your, you know, in your personal experience, is that, what does that cutoff mean to you? Is that the $2 million tax credit field?
Well, the large corporations who purchase these tax credits, they don't purchase it on one deal. They purchase it on many deals. So it's possible that that $2 million cutoff could impact the corporation's willingness or appetite for purchasing tax credits. Absolutely.
I would just say that goes to my point earlier. You tinker with the tax code, you have all kinds of unintended consequences.
Thanks for chiming in, Eric. We really appreciate you raising that issue. We talked before about Cuomo suddenly being interested in investigating the various pros and cons of marijuana legalization. And Kyle in Chelsea has a question about that. Hi, Kyle, you're on WNYC.
Hi, I love NPR, and I've never called in before, so I'm a little nervous. But
welcome in, and relax.
Yeah, before you mentioned the criminal justice system briefly, and I was just wondering, in states that they did legalize marijuana, like what happens to people that were arrested for those crimes, you know, they're serving time. I'm not talking about big doses. I'm just saying.
That's a really interesting question, Fred. Would it be retroactive in any way that people serving time for the kinds of marijuana offenses that may now become anachronistic if we go down that route could be revisited?
I don't know. I mean, I think the arrests and convictions have been declining locally for a while, and there's you know, two very different tiers. There are people who are dealing in large amounts and smuggling and at a racketeering level. It's hard to imagine them getting any added leniency, you know, because I think what they did would probably still be problematic. Clearly, they wouldn't be paying sales tax.
Well, if it was legal as a recreational, legitimate recreational, you know, substance, legitimate product like wine and beer, Karen, those quote big dealers would have a new name in New York State, and that would be wholesalers.
Yeah, well, maybe it would be a case for clemency at the end of the year when the governor does that, or pardons. I don't know if you could go back retroactively and change it, but certainly going forward, it would be a lot different.
We're just about out of time. What haven't we mentioned? Anything that you want to raise? You want to toss anything? Oh, Fred is looking like, I don't know, which means we've done a really good job here this half hour going over the items in the state budget proposal. Karen?
Yeah, I think so. I was just going to look through my notes. I think one thing that we didn't mention that I think that you wanted to talk about, Brian, was the Child Victims Act. Governor Cuomo's putting another push for that to expand the statute of limitations to 50 years after the alleged incident occurred. That's something that's been stuck in the legislature for years. The Catholic Church in the past was against it when they were having all the sexual abuse scandals, and the governor's putting it in his budget because he has a lot of leverage in the state budget. And he puts a lot of policy into the state budget because essentially he can tell lawmakers with the budget, take it or leave it. If you don't want my budget, the government shuts down and it's your fault. So this is when he has his greatest leverage. And actually, I'm surprised he didn't put more policy things into his budget, given that this is when he has his greatest power.
And you mentioned lengthening the statute of limitations for child sexual abuse. We also played the clip earlier where he said we need to set a uniform code of sexual harassment policies and procedures that apply to every branch of state and local government. Fred, what does he have in mind there that would be new?
Well, you know, I just want to say at the end of the budget briefing book, there is a long litany of, you know, legislation that needs to be passed supposedly in order for the budget to take place. And that is where a lot of these
non-financial
issues make it into the budget. But he didn't hit them that hard the other day, notwithstanding that piece of tape. So the sexual harassment part is part of a bigger women's rights package. It's paired actually with some perennial issues like reproductive health rights, codifying certain abortion rights. But you know, they want to kind of work with the legislators. I don't know if they're talking about yet another blue ribbon panel exactly, but I think they're trying to get out ahead of it and at least make at a minimum make a show of having a crackdown.
All right. Well,
I was just going to say he does want to give more money to his ethics commission to investigate allegations of sexual harassment.
I think usually the ethics commission investigates ways to strengthen the ethics commission, and then they don't actually implement them, and that's another show.
Exactly. That's for a whole another half hour.
But it is budget season now for New York State. From now till approximately April 1st, which is the budget deadline, and all these budgetary and non-budgetary items that we've been talking about are in play right now in New York State, and we will continue to follow them. And we thank WNYC Albany correspondent Fred Mogul and Karen DeWitt, Capitol correspondent for New York State Public Radio. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Brian.